Listening to the BBC World Service. Now, in Riding the Graphene Wave, Jerry Northam asks scientists and industrialists how they intend to make a commercial success from the global interest in a new wonder material, graphene, first isolated at Manchester University, where a new National Graphene Institute is now under construction.
It's a chilly, bright, wintry day in Manchester, and this is a building site in the enormous university quarter to the south of the city centre. 4 months ago, the science minister poured the first concrete of a £61 million development called the National Graphene Institute. If you believe everything you read, graphene is the wonder material of the 21st century, a revolutionary discovery by two physicists here, for which they won the Nobel Prize 3 years ago.
It's like early days of discovery of atom or something like that.
And a discovery that could transform technology, just as the silicon chip did in the late 20th century.
It would take an elephant balancing on a pencil to break a piece the thickness of cling film.
By spring of 2015, this building will be finished, and work is already underway in the surrounding university departments on a wide range of applications.
The Gates Foundation is funding the university to look into the scope for graphene in condoms.
But sceptics are beginning to ask, are Asia and the United States pulling ahead in the race, even as we're assembling the bricks and mortar?
The Asian countries, they were very fast to understand the potential applications for this new material.
Will this be another example of a British discovery in which Britain itself loses out to the rest of the world?
I'm Nathan Hill. I'm the Business Development and Strategy Director for the National Graphene Institute here in Manchester. We're on the South Campus of Manchester University, and what we're looking at is the building to the National Graphene Institute, which is an 80,000 square foot, five-storey building. We first broke ground on it in August, and as you can see, it's now already above ground level.
Why a National Graphene Institute at Manchester University?
We have a fantastic range of scientific activities here, not just our two Nobel Prize winners who first isolated the material, but about 120 researchers. Add to that the equipment, venture finance, intellectual property management, and partners in business, and we then really have a national hub where the whole world can come and work together with us.
Away from the traffic and the building site, Nathan Hill turned his attention to the interest in graphene already shown by commercial companies.
We have had hundreds of companies coming here to see what we're doing. We have over 20 industrial partners already.
Who would be some of the big ones?
Well, our first strategic partner is actually a US-Chinese company called Bluestone Global Tech, and they are manufacturers of sheets of graphene. It's a fantastic example of a partnership. They have invested over £5 million in three research projects within the National Graphene Institute, which will advance our science to help their business over the long term. The second part of the deal is that they're moving their equipment and their people into Manchester, which gives us availability of their material and process for our science and our future partners. And the third part of the deal is that they've announced that they want to establish eventually their European manufacturing in Manchester. We hear so much about how China and America are superstar economies that we can't compete with, and yet we have a Chinese-American company setting up shop here in the UK. And that's a great tribute at this early stage in the game.
In offices and laboratories next to the building site, university scientists are already working on developments from graphene, possible applications which could prove commercially successful, and further basic research on other materials which can be produced in layers just one atom thick. One of the lecturers, Dr. Aravind Vijayaraghavan, agreed to explain what makes graphene such a remarkable discovery.
So it was not only was it a new material, but it was a new class of materials. It's like something like discovering plastic, something very, very new that we've never had before.
Given that it is so thin, what are its properties that make it potentially useful?
For starters, of course, it's the thinnest material in the world, and it's very transparent, as you might imagine. It's also the strongest material in the world. It's the best electrical conductor we have. It's very strong, but it's also very bendable, very pliable. It's completely impermeable, so you can't pass anything through it. What's remarkable really is not any one of these things, but the fact that you have all of these things in one material.
What would be the range of things that you can see as potential?
One of the first things where you'll see graphene in would be things like conductive coatings. For example, the coating on the screen of your mobile phone.
We've got a phone here.
Yes, we do. It's a prototype.
Just show me what
phone.
It is.
So basically what we have...
Looks like an ordinary mobile.
It's just an ordinary mobile phone. And the thing graphene is doing here is not doing anything extraordinary. It's just doing exactly what the current screen does. It doesn't look any different, it doesn't feel any different, and that's the whole point. But in the future, you might imagine a bendable phone, for example. If you get something like that, the screen needs to be bendable, which means the coating shouldn't crack if you bend it. When you get to stuff like that and you're using graphene, which is not going to crack when you bend it, that's when you really start to notice the difference.
Aravind has started a new and somewhat unexpected research project with graphene.
It's a research project to develop the next generation condom based on a graphene composite. So this is sponsored by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They have a Grand Challenges scheme for global healthcare. And one of the things that they feel is important is sexually transmitted diseases and prevention, and to promote condom use, particularly in a lot of countries where it's not so popular now. But even in the Western world, there's a lot of hesitation in using a condom because it reduces the pleasure that you experience. The brief of the proposal was basically, can you make a new material that will make a better condom, but a condom that will be more desirable, that people will actually want to use?
Does that mean thinner material?
Basically, it's something that feels more natural, so it has to be thinner. Of course, you can't sacrifice strength, so it has to be as strong and as stretchable.
How far away are you from actually developing that?
A graphene polymer composite itself is not a new thing. But for applying it for this particular application and testing it in these unique circumstances is what we'll be carrying out over the next year and a half.
One of the early technical difficulties encountered in the story of graphene is how to make enough of it for researchers and industrialists to work with. On Teesside near Middlesbrough, a British company has come up with an answer. It's the brainchild of a brilliant materials chemist working at Durham University. Professor Carl Coleman perfected a production technique in his laboratory 4 years ago and then founded a manufacturing company here among the tall chimneys and cooling towers next to the former research headquarters of ICI. The company, Applied Graphene Materials, was floated on the stock market and was such an immediate success that Professor Coleman became Britain's first graphene millionaire just before his 42nd birthday.
I'm Carl Coleman, a professor of chemistry at Durham University and the chief technical director here at Applied Graphene Materials.
Is it fair to describe you as an academic turned graphene industrialist?
So yes, I started life as an academic and I'm still active in the academic arena.
And this is a process you've brought from the lab to an industrial plant here just outside Middlesbrough?
Exactly. So this is sort of technology that we developed in my labs at Durham University. We now have it set up as a full production unit here in the Wilton site in Middlesbrough.
And the production unit is inside. Shall we go and look at it?
Yes, we'll have a look at that.
We step through into the main production centre. And here it is, encased behind glass. A collection of tubes, metal pipes.
This is our main production tool, and we actually pipe it into this vessel to where it gets heated and then produces the graphene into this hot zone of the reactor. So that's our zone two. And then from zone two, it's taken over with inert gas into our zone three area, which is where we actually collect the graphene material.
And how does it come out as...?
As a slurry. That will be the graphene that ultimately then goes to graphene as a powder form.
You've got a patent on this process. How much of it is secret?
The secret part is really that the first part of how we actually introduce the material and the collection end of zone three. We don't tell anybody how we actually collect those nanoparticles.
How much could you make in the course of a year?
This production unit you're seeing here, 1 ton per annum.
To grow the business in line with demand, the company's brought in a chief executive with a record in managing the production of composite materials. John Mabbitt took over in July and last month saw the company through its successful launch on the stock market.
The graphene we produce, when we've separated it, is small nanoplatelets, one atomic layer thick. As a powder, it appears like a black powdery substance.
So this powder in the tube here looks like, well, it looks like poster paint powder, doesn't it? Black, jet black. Tiny, tiny little particles, but each of them will have many layers of graphene in it. What's graphene already being used for?
The only real-life application that's out in any volume is a tennis racket, which was launched this year by Head. I've got an example here.
It's lighter, is it? And stronger?
It's actually the graphene's used to make it a bit stronger and stiffer. There's 0.8 of a gram of graphene in a 240-gram racket.
Your company is the first solely devoted to graphene to float on the stock markets in Britain. How did that go?
We floated on AIM on November the 20th.
That's the alternative investment market.
Yeah. Went extremely well. We kicked off the process at the beginning of September and successfully raised the amount of funding we were looking for.
What was your company valued at on the Wednesday when you went to market?
We opened at a market cap of £26.2 million.
And what happened to it over the next few days?
Well, completely out of our control, of course. There was an appetite for shares in the company. And by Friday, the market cap had raised to £80 million.
In 3 days, you'd gone from £26 million to £80
million. Yeah.
Valuation of the company.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, nothing actually changed. This was a paper exercise. And what I must point out is that, you know, we've got a long-term business plan here and the major shareholders, investors are looking at the business long-term.
One of the curious things is that, as I understand it, you currently don't have any customers. You've got the production process, but no one to buy it. Is that right?
That's right. The whole business philosophy since Carl had started the company back in 2010 was to prove that we had a process that could be scaled up and manufacture graphene nanoplatelets at volume. And only when we demonstrated that we could make graphene at volume did we start to engage with a customer base, which was only in the early part of 2013.
So what's the annual turnover of the company at the moment?
We closed our financial year at the end of July with £11,000 worth of revenues. Just 11,000, yes, that's right.
You've got £11,000 of turnover. You've got £80 million valuation of the company. Is there a bubble here, like the dot-com bubble?
Well, we seriously don't expect that to be the case. The appetite for graphene and the number of applications where graphene can be used is fantastic. As long as the applications develop, we are extremely well positioned to be able to satisfy that with the raw materials.
I've come to what amounts to a high-tech industrial estate on the outskirts of Cambridge, where a winding drive takes you past the Bill Gates building, then the Microsoft building, to the yellow brick of the university's Department of Engineering. It's here that graphene development is underway in the Division of Electrical Engineering, including nanotechnology.
I'm Andrea Ferrari, I'm a professor of nanotechnology at the University of Cambridge, and I'm the director of the Cambridge Graphene Center. Graphene is a new material, so the bottom line is you should not really try to substitute an existing technology with a new material. You should create a new technology with the new material. And of course, it takes a lot of thinking and maybe luck and genius in order to get to know what is the killer application.
If you already have 50 PhDs working with you and you're looking to get another 50. Is this an attractive field for the smartest physicists to work in?
Yeah, I believe at the moment to be quite attractive, especially for engineers. When it comes to applications, there's a lot of work to do. It's quite simple to make one device in the lab. It's extremely complicated. It takes a lot of work and development to do something that can be mass produced. Everybody everywhere is interested, and several governments and companies are investing a lot of money. So in this respect, everybody is striving to get applications as soon as possible. The question is, what is the time scale where we would expect real devices in real life?
I've come to the heart of the university, and I've arrived outside the small upstairs office opposite the grand entrance to King's College. This is the home of a research consultancy which has made a detailed study of graphene worldwide.
I'm Quentin Tannock, I'm chairman of Cambridge IP. We observe an incredible spike or rise in patenting activity, rates at which patents are applied for around the world on graphene, since around 2007. If we look at the analysis, which I'm showing on the screen here, you'll see that in terms of numbers of patents filed by Chinese, United States, South Korean and United Kingdom entities around the world, we see that Chinese entities have filed over 2,000 patents and patent applications around graphene, the USA around 1,700, South Korea an astounding 1,100 or more, and the United Kingdom around 54.
So in purely numerical terms, we're nowhere.
If you look at the numbers, it appears as if, as you say, the race has been lost. But the reality is somewhat different. My view is that firstly, it's too soon to tell whether or not, in inverted commas, the race has been lost. And this is because graphene is a very, very complex space. It's obviously a global space, as you can see from the international competition. It's a very complex technology, not only to develop, but also to deploy. So I think this is not so much a sprint as a marathon, and it's too early to tell who will win the marathon.
Graphene activity across the world is growing at a hectic pace, which, as we've heard, is especially impressive in many Asian countries. At the Graphene Research Centre at the University of Singapore, the director, Professor Antonio Castronetto, sees the wave rising and the smartest surfers already riding it.
Several different countries are investing quite heavily in graphene research. South Korea, for instance, has probably invested probably close to $500 million. You know, Singapore, for instance, that is a small country, only 5 million people, has invested around $100 million. You find the same amount in China and Taiwan.
We see something of a global race going on to develop graphene. Mm-hmm. How would you say Britain and Asia are doing in this global race? Are you ahead of us?
When we talk about race in technologies, the race is not something happening in a nice racetrack. It's actually a race in the jungle. You know, you never know if you're going to reach your objective or somebody else will reach the objective first. England is the birthplace of graphene, but Asian countries, they were very fast to understand the potential applications for this new material.
And there are indeed thousands of patents taken out in Asia compared with a relatively small number in Britain. Yeah. Again, it appears as if we're lagging behind, doesn't it?
Yes, I recently looked at a report from the UK Patent Office on these technologies, graphene technology especially. It's amazing to see the dominance of Asian countries. You know, I take as an example of Singapore. Singapore, as I said, is a very small country with essentially no natural resources. And still, if you compare the number of graphene patents to the total number of patents produced in the country, Singapore is number one in the world. So although Singapore is a small country, so the total number of patents is much smaller than, for instance, China or the United States, the effort in looking into this material is very strong here.
So back where we started in Manchester, how well placed does the UK look to capitalise on this surge in activity? The Vice-Chancellor of the University is Professor Dame Nancy Rothwell.
I don't think we are already losing the race. There are lots of data quoted, for example, on number of patents, which is a dreadful measure. A patent can be worth absolutely nothing or worth a fortune, and it isn't the number, it's the quality and your ability to defend it.
One of the things arising from recent decades of history in Britain is the observation that we're terrifically good at scientific advance, Alan Turing and the first computing done here in Manchester. But we weren't very good at developing computers as a business. Are we going to see the same sort of gap with graphene, where the brilliance of the invention comes here, but the development doesn't?
I hope not, but it certainly is a possibility. It's certainly true that we've seen more global companies than we have British companies expressing an interest. While the university has a very, very important responsibility in doing our very best to ensure that we apply what we've discovered on graphene, the development has to be in the commercial sector.
But that's what the Institute is supposed to be the bridge for, isn't it? The bridge between, as it were, the laboratory and industry.
It is intended to be the bridge. But of course, we rely on those companies that want to come in and walk across that bridge. And there are many that do, but I would say there are more outside the UK than inside the UK at the present time.
You sound as if you're one of the sceptics in this field. You think we're at least not where we should be.
My concern is that there is more interest in innovation, true innovation, from some international companies than some UK companies. Having said that, there are three or four routes to commercialisation of graphene. One is partnership with other companies, and certainly there are some British companies that are very interested. Another is through starting up your own companies. And the other thing I should say is that when we talk about did the UK lose or gain something, we have to be careful how we address that, because the formal country location of a company may be less important than where the jobs are created and the wealth is created. So it may be that a company from China, such as Bluestone, that is relocating to Manchester will create jobs and wealth in Manchester, even though actually they are a Chinese-owned company.
How optimistic do you feel about this? There's obviously a huge expectation built up around graphene. Where do you think it will end up?
I think the scope is phenomenal, and if 10% of the current ideas are actually realised, it will be transformational. As you probably know, graphene is already in materials on the market. The new opportunities are arising all the time. I'm sure you've heard the recent news stories that the Gates Foundation is funding the university to look into the scope for graphene in condoms.
So tennis rackets and condoms, but transformational?
Yes. Already, the estimate is 2 million mobile phones have been sold in China with graphene touchscreens. I've been promised a large scale, a laptop size graphene touchscreen that I'll be able to fold up and put in my pocket. It's almost endless, the opportunities.
Will Britain get left behind in the international race for commercial success from graphene? It's a fear we found just below the surface in talking to experts for this programme. They recognise the danger. But we've also found a determination to get and stay ahead, or at least to keep up with the race leaders. If graphene lives up to its spectacular promise, there are plenty of people working now to ensure that Britain matches the success of Manchester's Nobel Prize-winning physicists.
Riding the Graphene Wave is a City Broadcasting production. The producer is Philip Revel.